Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it. How are you, Dee?
I'm okay. How are you?
I mean, ups and downs, highs and lows.
Hopping along.
Just call me Hop Along. I had a bit of an incident, hashtag footgate, last week in a bar. It's like one of the only nights
I've
been out.
That's why you shouldn't go to bars.
Seriously, when do we ever go to bars?
I know.
And some very drunken woman who actually we know quite well just basically dropped and smashed her glass, full glass of booze on my foot. It just popped the foot open. And then I feel like I've definitely damaged the ligaments. I'm laughing because, you know, what else is there to do?
Yeah, what else can you do? But I'm going to say this on here so everyone else can get at you as well. You need to go and see somebody.
Okay, Mum. Anyway, how are you? What's happening?
I'm all right.
You look great today.
Thank you.
I love this little green, what is it? Green cashmere onesie.
I've sort of come in loungewear today because we're here for such a long time. If anyone wants to see, I'm basically wearing, like a onesie.
How are you getting on with little Gigi?
She's all good. Yeah, she's lovely, actually. Yeah.
She's such a good bubba.
Yeah, I went to see schools yesterday. That's a bit scary.
I can't believe that Axel's starting school in September. How did that happen?
I don't know. I really don't know. When I was looking around, like at all the children in the classroom, classes and stuff, I was literally like, oh my god, you're all actual children.
Yeah,
like, you're not like toddlers or babies, you're children, and you're sitting at desks and you're writing. I mean, what the hell?
I mean, will he be going dressed as a police officer every single day? That's the question I want to know.
No, but but I do think uniform has something to do with the school you pick, because I saw this school yesterday which had red berets, so then I googled schools in Brentwood with red beret.
Did you?
Yeah, because I think he'd love to wear a red beret. So, you know, watch this space.
Excellent. Any sort of dress up Axel's involved in, he enjoys. So today is going to be a fairly tough conversation, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is.
We've had some messages about grief, and we've obviously touched on this subject before when we spoke to the absolutely incredible Cara Greenwood, who came in to talk about baby loss, but we haven't ever talked about parenting through grief. So if something, you know, traumatic happens in our lives, how do we then cope? What are our coping mechanisms to then be able to carry on parenting?
Yeah.
So for example, the loss of a parent. Now, I lost my dad in 2013. I wasn't a mum at this point. I was 30. Out of the blue, he had a humongous heart attack, a pulmonary embolism that shot from his left leg up to his lungs, and he just died. It was horrendous. No time to prep, nothing. So I went through it, and I'm still going through it as a parent. It didn't happen when I'd had my children, but for me, it's about communicating the loss of Luna and Kit's grandfather to them, and I do.
Yeah, because you want them to know who he was, that he would have been a big part of their lives, that he is a big part of their lives because he's in you.
Yeah. And I also want to show them that it mattered to me. So I'm quite comfortable crying in front of them. When we look at pictures of him, he's up around the house all the time. So I've got a taste of how it feels. But the girl that we're talking to today lost her mum very tragically this year, not that long ago. She's mum to two, and she speaks very openly on her Instagram about her loss.
Yeah, she does. I mean, you can't imagine having to put on that brave face every morning or every day. Mm. And if you have to put on a brave face, maybe you don't. I'm going to be really interested to see what she says, how she's been coping. I think sometimes on Instagram you see how someone's doing, but until you actually speak to them, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So I think that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and this is the first chat that she's done in this sort of way. So
today we are chatting to Katie Impey, aka the Mum Lifestyle. Let's get into it. So we are absolutely over the moon and so excited that this amazing woman sitting opposite us today has blessed us with her presence. She is an incredible mum to two, Lottie, who's three, and Isabella, who's eight. She's got a fantastic Instagram, The Mum Lifestyle, talking all things fashion and parenting. She's just basically one of the nicest humans I've ever met. So we're so happy that Katie...
Set me off already.
That is a good intro.
She is. Katie Impey, the Mum Lifestyle is in the house. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm okay.
Yeah, you're not allowed to start crying yet.
I know. I mean, this is ridiculous.
So it does have that effect with our intros.
Now, Katie, obviously today is going to be a fairly tough conversation, but we feel... a very important one to have. We're going to be talking about parenting through grief. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've had probably one of the worst years of your life this year. Can you just talk us through what's been going on over the last 12 months?
Okay, so in August last year, my mum was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And it became apparent quite quickly that it was terminal. And then over the space of 9 months, she... just things went from bad to worse, really. And she passed away in April of this year. So it's when I reflect on the last 12 months, it almost seems like a bad dream. It's like, how can life change so drastically, you know, in such a short space of time? It doesn't seem real at times, but unfortunately it is, and we're living it.
So. What was that moment like for you as her daughter, finding out that she had terminal cancer?
Shocking and terrifying. She's had cancer before. She had breast cancer just before she turned 40. So I was in my teens. And so it's always a kind of like a dark cloud that had hung over us, that the C word. Mm-hmm. And I'd had my own cancer scare the year before. I'd had precancerous cells on my cervix, which seemed really scary at the time. And now on reflection, it's, you know.
Was that when you went for a smear?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they came back abnormal, but they were quite advanced. So I had to have surgery, I had to have part of my cervix removed, and that was terrifying. And I just remember thinking, oh my god, it's come to get me. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of have always lived with that fear. We had the BRCA gene test because my mum had breast cancer under 40, and her mum actually died. She was 29 so my grandmother was 29 when she died of breast cancer. So my mum was 4 when she lost her mum. So it's always been a big part of our lives. And then to find out that actually we'd had these kind of checkups every year after her being in remission from the breast cancer, 15 years ago. And then to find out that actually she'd had this kidney cancer for at least 7 years.
No.
Did that make you feel quite angry?
It's something that I've had to put in a box, because if I address that anger, it will really rile me and make me feel irrational thoughts. And so I've very much had to box that away. We found out that after she was diagnosed that they'd missed the tumour. She'd had a scan. She'd been having persistent urinary infections. And she was 61 by this point.
So young, though.
They just dismissed it, the sweats and the tiredness and the kind of just that unwell feeling that she couldn't put her finger on as the menopause. Mm, yeah. And then it was only this one amazing GP that had the foresight to look back over her records. And she was like, hang on a minute, these urine infections are so persistent. And then she went so far back that she saw this. She said, oh, you had a scan in 2011 and it showed a mass. My mum was like, oh, can't remember, you know. Lots happened in those 7 years. She became a grandmother. You know, you think what happened in the space of 7 years, life in general, the trips that you take, the jobs, you know, whatever. Mm. That scan actually showed the start of a tumour. which went undetected. And by the time it was diagnosed in August of last year, it was stage four. It spread to her lungs. The original source was her left kidney. It spread to her right kidney. And the tumour that was around 3 centimetres in 2011 was over 11 centimetres. It was bigger than the kidney itself.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So it was like, bam, bam. It was just so much. And it just kind of went from bad to worse, really.
And was there no hope? The diagnosis was terminal, that was it.
Well, with kidney cancer, it's always terminal. So you can't treat it with conventional cancer treatment, so it doesn't respond to chemo. There's obviously lots of research and there are some really innovative treatments out there. But because my mum's had progressed to the stage that it was, it was really a case of just containing it as much as they could and prolonging her life as much as possible. So that was the hope. But she had surgery to have the kidney removed in the August. She just never really recovered from that surgery. It was almost like we'd rattled the hornet's nest. You know, it's like it'd been laid kind of dormant and undetected. And really, considering how widespread the cancer was, she'd lived such a normal... I mean, we were in Ibiza the week before she was diagnosed, dancing at a beach club, drinking mojitos.
Wow.
You know, I remember joking that we invited them to join us on our holiday so my husband and I could, you know, have a bit of party time in Ibiza. And this one particular night, my mum and dad wouldn't go home. They were the ones dancing. I was like, come on, guys, you know.
You're here for us.
Babysitters. This is our time. Exactly. And she just, like, had so much life in her. So it was just shocking. And I think the thing with cancer is it's a cruel disease in so many ways, but in some ways it prepares you at every stage. So you think that how are you going to live through this? How are you going to get through this? And at some point you adjust and that becomes the new normal. And then you get hit with another wave of bad news. And then at some stage you adjust to that and that becomes the new normal. And at every stage, you know, my dad was a typical man, and you know, he's never made a bed or loaded the dishwasher or done any of those things. And as my mum's as the disease progressed and she got more and more poorly, he just took more and more on and became just, you know, it taught him a lot of life lessons. And now he's kind of able to do things that he would never have been able to do if it had been a sudden thing. He would have literally just been sat there going,
we were talking about this earlier on, and I was saying in the chat before you came in that obviously when I lost my dad, it was a pulmonary embolism, so a blood clot in the leg just shot straight to his lungs, so there wasn't a chance to say goodbye. And actually I was in Ibiza and I couldn't get on a flight, and he died almost instantly. So my mum was left with that reality of kind of, what do I do now? You know, it's that feeling. But I guess, you know, with an illness, there isn't, it, one way isn't better or worse.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They both bring absolute horrors and traumas.
Ultimately, you're left to live the rest of your lives without that person.
Exactly.
And in some ways, the cancer is cruel because you see it. Taking that, you know, it damaged my mum more emotionally than it did physically. I mean, she changed so much mentally.
Right.
And that I found the hardest thing to cope with. But then we were able to get used to the idea. We were able to do things when we were eventually told that she had weeks, you know, the cancer had spread beyond any, you know, they trialed her on this treatment called immunotherapy, which is really groundbreaking in terms of kidney cancer. And I know that it's really successful for a lot of people, but it was obviously just too little too late for my mum. But we were able to have 4 amazing weeks. I got married.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you do? That was my next... Were you going to say the same thing?
Yeah, same. Yeah, I was going to say, how do you go about sort of making those weeks the best that they can possibly be?
So, you know, you never... you don't ever want to be faced with that prospect. But I guess when you're in that, then you just have to make every day count as much as you can, really. I had a message from somebody on Instagram just this week, actually, saying that she'd was going through something similar. Her mum been diagnosed with cancer and it was terminal, and that she only had a few months left, and you know, she feels lost. And my advice to anybody going through that is to just be grateful for the here and now and live in the here and now. Like, I tried not to allow myself to get too upset during her illness, because I knew that at some point she wasn't going to be around and I would have the rest of my life to cry and be sad. And I didn't want to waste a single day of her being here feeling sad. So, you know, I was just so grateful that every day that we had her, and even on the rubbish days and she was really sick and it was really tough to see her like that, I was just glad that she was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just no matter whether it's days, weeks, months, you just have to live for the
grab
now.
Hold
don't,
of it,
don't
you?
Look too far ahead.
Yeah, and obviously your children are really young. So especially Lottie. So how did you go about sort of telling them, explaining to them what was going on, or did you not?
So we didn't really tell Lottie anything.
Well, she was what, two at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Isabella had a particularly close relationship with my mum, beyond the usual grandmother, granddaughter. I mean, Isabella since described my mum as a second mum. And they formed an especially close bond from like the moment she was born. My mum was in the room with me when I had her. She was literally like business end on a stool, like head in front of the midwives. And she was the first person to see Isabella. Like, she could see her head coming out. Gruesome.
That moment that we don't want to think about.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The one that I definitely didn't want my husband to see. So yeah, they had an especially close relationship. So I was really conscious. I didn't want to frighten her, because I was terrified. We were all terrified, and I didn't want her to live with that, the fear that I was feeling, unless it was completely necessary. And then obviously once we knew that she'd had the surgery, but the cancer had spread and that it was terminal, we decided to tell her. But we were going to tell her together over a weekend. I remember it was half term. So I'd had her with me, and we'd been to the farm with friends. And when we got back to the car park, put the girls in the car, and it was my friend who was over from Ibiza. And she was like, oh, you know, put the kids in the car. She's like, how's your mum? Because she knew that the girls didn't know. And I said, oh, not good. And da-da-da-da-da. Sort of had a little chat with her. And when I got in the car, Isabella said to me, why do you keep talking about Nanny and you don't tell me? And I just thought, I need to tell you. And she just looked at me. She said, has she got cancer?
No.
And I was like, oh, my God. And I thought, anything I say other than yes is going to be a lie. Mm. So I just had to have the conversation with her, and it was horrific. I remember driving and, like, she was sobbing, she was crying, she was screaming for her... Oh, God. She was crying for her dad. And I just felt awful, because I couldn't... You can't protect them from that. That is the truth. Mm. And she's very intelligent. She's very mature. And she deserved to know the truth. But after that, she handled it really, really well. And was very brave. We had another wobble when my mum started to have... It spread to my mum's brain by November. So she started to have radiotherapy. And it meant that she lost her hair. So that was something.
So that was a visible thing,
yes,
that,
yeah,
Isabella had to deal with. And you could,
yeah,
see, yeah, you can see it.
So that was she found that really difficult. And it was something that my mum was terrified of. She didn't want Isabella to see her differently. And we went down the wig route. It's so funny because Lottie loves playing hairdressers, and she was doing my, she usually does my mum's hair, but obviously my mum didn't have any hair. But she had a wig that she kept in the spare room upstairs on like a little wig stand. And Lottie, instead of doing my mum's hair, was doing my dad's. And then Lottie said, oh, Nanny, it's your turn now. And my mum said, oh, but Nanny hasn't got any hair. She said, yes, you have. It's upstairs in the bedroom. I'll go and get it. So I think, and she's very, that kind of blatant, like, say what you see attitude. She will walk into a room and say, my nanny died. And it's like, but it's, yeah, that's just facts, and she doesn't carry any emotional connection to it. It's something that's happened, and I don't think she has any emotion with that yet. She's three.
Yeah.
But she will say, we've got like a glass, like a panoramic roof in the car, and she'll go, well, she'll just be in the car and wave through the roof and be like, hello, Nanny. Nanny's in the sky. And she'll talk so openly about it, whereas Isabella is much more of a closed book. And we've had a few moments with her where she's been acting out since my mum died, and which is really out of character for her. And when I've pushed her on it, she says it's because she's angry.
Angry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which
of course.
Hurts me so much because she's the kindest little girl. So to think that that beautiful little soul feels anger, oh God, it breaks my heart.
Of course it does. And I guess for anybody that's going through something similar to you, or that's lost a parent that's got young kids, what do you say to her? What do you say to Isabella? Do you explain, you know, do you try and really go there with her emotionally, or are you trying to sort of numb it?
Well, for quite I was gonna say for a long time, it hasn't been a long time. I mean, it's been like 7 months since she passed away, so in the grand scheme of things, it isn't a long time. But I think certainly for the first few months, and during my mum's illness as well, I very much tried to protect Isabella from how I was feeling. So like that fear, you know, I was just terrified, anxious, worried, scared. And then after she passed away, that sadness, and I tried to protect Isabella from that, because that's what you do as a parent. You want to protect your children from everything. You don't ever want them to be upset. Mm. The bullies at school,
yeah,
you know, whatever it might be. So I tried to protect her from that. And then there was a moment when, I think it was when we were talking about her being angry, and I said, "It's, you know, it's okay, you know, to be angry." I said, why didn't you talk to me about how you were feeling? You can talk to me about anything, you know. If you were feeling angry, I wish you'd said, you know, you can come talk to me about anything. She said, oh, I didn't want to upset you.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was a real pivotal moment for me, because I realised that up until then, I'd been hiding my emotions, and I was almost saying to her, this is how you deal with emotion.
Yeah.
You hide
yeah.
it.
You're yeah. trying to protect each other.
Of course. Yeah. It's yeah. like a beautiful dance around each other, it, trying yeah. to exactly. look after one another.
And I thought, well, no, she needs to know that it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to cry, because, you know, your grief is equal to your love.
And your happiness
yeah.
and your sadness and your laughter. It's all one of the same. It's yeah, all emotions. They exactly. all mean something.
And we've all lost a great uncle, or a, you know, even when a celebrity dies and you feel like, oh God, you know, George Michael, and you yeah. kind of feel that like, oh, that sadness. But then you move on from it because they didn't have that much of an impact on your life. Whereas somebody that's a big part of your life, and you miss them every day, you're constantly going to carry that sadness. So, and that sadness is going to bubble over, and sometimes in the strangest of ways. And Zoe, you and I had a moment a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. I was coming into London for work, and I got off the tube at Bond Street tube station, and literally could not control myself. I was sobbing. My mum used to every weekend jump on the tube, get off at Bond Street Tube and would have like her little shop. Like, she was a shopaholic. She shopped constantly.
I wonder where you get it from.
Oh, and honestly, I mean, we joke that like the TK Maxx profits must have plummeted after April, because, you know, she was constantly in there, and she loved shopping, and it was something we would do a lot together as well. And it just hit me, and I got myself together and walked into this event, and I saw Zoe, and she was so great, and I was like, I can't believe that something like that would generate such a huge
trigger. I was in a coffee shop only literally last week, and there was a grandfather on the next door table with his grandson, and they were joking around and playing. They were playing this game with a straw, and I just burst into tears. I had to turn my head away, and I thought, my dad never met my children. Never met, like, they're not going to know. They're going to know about him, but they won't ever get to sit on his knee, won't ever get to make them giggle or take them to the park or take them swimming. It's devastating, still devastating. My dad died 6 years ago, and I still think about him every day. But I have to keep his memory alive by telling Luna and Kit. And Luna says, I don't have a Grandpa Peter, because Grandpa Peter's drinking a beer in the pool, because that's what he lived in Kenya, and he was always seen by the side of a pool with a cold one in his hand. So she says that. So we talk about him, and it's really lovely for me. But that never goes away.
You've recreated his character for them. So he, and that's the thing, isn't it? When I actually really enjoy talking about my mum, especially like on my Instagram, and sharing obviously the journey that we went on with her illness, and then beyond that. And I will still talk about her, and a post will pop up on my Facebook, and I'll pop it up on my Instagram. I mean, 99% of the people that follow me didn't know my mum, have never met her.
Sure.
But it's a way of keeping her alive.
Absolutely. And that's key, because just because the physical body isn't here any longer doesn't mean their soul isn't. And I think people stop talking about the dead. You know, we're not even supposed to mention it. You know, grief is grief. And we're mothers now. We've got kids to look after. But our parent has died.
Yeah.
And that, nobody prepares you for losing a parent. And then you become a parent, and then your own mortality starts being questioned.
Oh, God, yeah.
Have you been through that?
Yeah. I get really anxious about like the little things. I think, oh God, you know, and I think my mum lost her mum at a really young age.
Yeah.
And now I've lost my mum, and even though I'm in my 30s,
you're never prepared. You're never going to be prepared.
And like I say, that whole cancer thing is something that has always kind of lived over us. And I think my mum, actually, because of that, even though she was only 61, she was ready. She, when she turned 60, she was so happy. She never ever thought she'd reach 60. So she was like, I've made 60. So whatever I get off beyond this, a bonus years. Like, she was, that was her genuine attitude to life. And obviously we didn't realise how little time after that we would have got, but she was like, I've had the best life, you know, I've had a good life, I have no regrets. And, you know, that made it a lot easier for all of us to kind of deal with her not being around, knowing that she was content with what she was leaving behind, and the life that she'd led definitely made things a little bit easier.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What have you learnt through the process in terms of your own parenting? So what, I guess the question is, are there things that you wish you had said to your girls, and or do you feel like you've been honest in your grief to them?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wasn't for a while, and that was a learning curve. And I think grief is so unique. The circumstances of your grief are unique. So like you lost your dad very suddenly. Mine, we had a whole process and time to adjust. And, you know, whether it's a mum, it's a dad, that relationship, I think my grief, had it been my dad, for example, would have been different because my relationship with him is different. And
yeah.
I think it's such a unique thing. You just have to learn to ride the waves.
We were talking about this, weren't we?
Yeah, it's a cliche, but once you're in it, it makes sense. It is literally like waves, and like it's always going to be, forever going to be a part of your life. That is now a part of who you are. Grief is a part of who you are, and it will always be an undercurrent. And there will be times when those waves get really choppy and really, really difficult to kind of keep your head above water, and you become consumed by it. But I've learned to allow myself to be consumed and to have a bad day or two, because I know that if I fight it, it will just drag on and on and on. Whereas if I allow it and allow myself to go to that place for a day or two, I'll wake up one day and just feel better.
Yeah.
I think that allowing is really, I really love that, because if it ever comes up or ever I go to the place where I've got all my photographs of him and I sit with Luna and I let myself cry in front of her and she sees my tears and she says, "Don't cry, Mummy." Oh. You know, and we talk about Grandpa Peter together, and I think it's really nice for both of us. I'm not frightened to show her that, you know, I can howl with laughter, but I can also sob like I'm going to break. I think it's really, really,
absolutely.
I think it's important to show
absolutely. That. Absolutely. And we had... We had an incident last weekend. We went on a bit of a road trip. We drove to Cornwall to make up the time. We were playing like a car jukebox. So we were all taking it in turns to choose a song. Obviously, we had the whole back catalogue of Frozen from Lottie.
Every car journey.
Oh, God. I haven't got that yet.
You wait. It's out on Friday. You wait. And that wasn't a plug, by the way. Hashtag not an ad. And then it was Isabella's turn, and she said, there's a song that I want to play, but I think it will upset Mummy. I said, what is it? And I knew what she was going to say. And it was one of my mum's favourite songs was Donna Summer. And she was like, I want Nanny's song. And I was like, "Oh, let's put it on." I was like, I might cry a little bit. I said, but I'm also going to sing my heart out and remember, you know, dancing with her to it. I said, that's what we have to do. Like, let's put it on. So, yeah, definitely. I think just address it head on. And the one thing that I promised myself was that I wouldn't allow losing my mum to affect my children's childhood. So I just want to make the whole process that for me, like, that's my priority. No matter what I'm going through, I would hate for them to look back as adults and say, "Oh,
mummy was sad
and, you know,
all the time."
So I think that having those bad days and letting them see the sadness, but then having a couple of weeks of normal life is the way to do it for me.
I was just gonna say, so in, you know, like sort of practicalities of life, you know, going on school, all of that kind of stuff, what did you do after your mum passed? Did you keep sending your kids to school and nursery and try and keep the, you know, normal routine going?
Absolutely. I kept everything up as normally as possible. I almost sought sanctuary in normality. And also my mum, she was a northerner. She was from Manchester. She was a doer. She would say to me, "Oh, come on, love, I've not brought you up to be like that." She was like, you know, tough as anything.
Yeah.
And I knew that she would, like, be so disappointed in me if I'd have become, you know, just allow it to consume me, and I owe it to her to carry on and have a good life and be a great mum. I had a wobble for a few weeks after she died. I would send Isabella into school like 15 minutes late,
yeah,
just because I didn't want to run the gauntlet and feel like everyone was staring at me.
Yeah.
And I know that anyone that comes and talks to you, and I'm not saying for anybody that's, you know, witnessing somebody go through what I've been through to not say or do anything. That's the worst thing you can do, is to ignore it. But for
you,
me,
weren't
I
ready
just,
to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't want to have to have those conversations. So I just took that time until I was ready to then put a brave face on. And we took some time out. After the funeral, we went to Ibiza, which is our happy place. We holidayed there as a family every year. And my husband and I booked to go. My husband booked it. I said, you know, come on, let's do this. It's going to make you happy. And it's my happy place. And then my dad decided to join us. So we had a really nice couple of days. It's almost like, sounds like a really... Can I swear?
Yeah. Fucking course you can.
It sounds like a really fucked up way of putting it. But you know, like after a wedding and you have a honeymoon.
Yeah.
It was like our honeymoon after the funeral.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
Because you, like...
It's like going away somewhere and processing everything that's
happened. Yeah. It's just her funeral was unbelievable. I mean, it was spectacular. It was the most beautiful day. And it was... The turnout was phenomenal, and we put a lot into organising it for her, and she played a big part in organising, which she, you know, told us what she wanted. And that's another thing with an illness like that. You can, again, have that whole process of planning those things together. It doesn't make it any easier by any means, but you know that you're doing it as she would have wanted. But yeah, and then I just... It's the reality, isn't it? It's like you're almost running on adrenaline between them dying and the funeral.
And then it goes quiet. And
everybody's there and everybody's supportive, and you're constantly, you know, oh, yeah, this time at the church and these flowers. And it is. It's like organising a party.
And a distraction. Yeah. It's almost a welcome distraction.
Yeah. It's a welcome distraction, and it gives you momentum. But then the next day, it's like that wedding, that day after the wedding feeling. It's like, oh, what are we going to do now?
I know. Then you have to deal with the grief, and then that's what happens. And I'm wondering, actually, as you're talking, for me, I obviously didn't have Luna and Kit or Isla when he died, and I completely fell apart. I mean, I'd say I was in therapy for a year afterwards, and my therapist Phil, I mean, he saved my life, because I didn't think I would be able to carry on. And I'm wondering, you know, you said a couple of weeks, you know, and then you had to pick yourself up and get yourself on with it, because you have two girls to look after.
You have to.
I didn't have that.
See, so your therapist was your savior. My kids genuinely there's absolutely no way if I didn't have them, that I would not be anywhere near the person that I am, or have the inner strength. Like, they are my absolute motivation every day. Like, I would be an absolute wreck otherwise. I'd be consumed by it. Yeah. Absolutely. And I won't allow what happened to my mum to have an effect on them as people, as adults, as, you know, I don't want them to have the scars of that kind of trauma. That would be my biggest regret. That's what I work towards, just giving them as much normality as possible, but obviously incorporating the loss, I guess. Yeah.
Can you laugh?
Can I laugh? Oh, absolutely. Oh my God, we laugh all the time. And, you know, like you were saying about your dad, talking about them, there is not a day that goes by where we don't talk about my mum. My husband and I were in a restaurant on Friday, and he ordered a Thai curry. You know who'd love that? Your mum. She comes up in everything we do, you know, absolutely everything. My eldest's got a love of leopard print. My mum was known for leopard print. In fact, one of the things we're going to have to do is kind of have a sort out of her belongings, and one thing I've decided to do is for Christmas have cushions made for the girls out of my mum's dresses.
That's a lovely thing to do.
So, and my brother just recently got married and they're trying for a baby, so I'm going to have one made up for their baby when it comes. So just so like there's a little piece of her on Christmas Day, and yeah. I know you can do it with shirts, men's shirts and stuff. Oh God.
Yeah. I never cried.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
It's like a horrendous, sad reality that we're all going to have to face one day because, you know, like we're sitting here as mothers, but we are still children to somebody.
Exactly.
And that your parents do not die. That's not what's supposed to happen. And when they do, world rocked, you know.
A friend of mine, I met a friend of mine whilst my mum was ill, and her mum has Alzheimer's, and she said to me, and obviously her mum's still alive, but she's lost a huge part of her. She's not her mum anymore. And she said something like this: makes you feel like a grown up for the first time in your life. You grow up like that, like you're not a kid anymore. As long as your mum and dad are alive, you will always be a kid.
A kid to someone.
Exactly. So when you lose one of those, a part of you has to grow up.
And I'll be really honest, and I've said this to my mum, when he died I felt like I lost her as well, because it was the first time she lives in Kenya, so she went back and suddenly it was just my sister and I, and we were like, the core of our family is good. Like he was the pillar stone. He kept us together. And yes, you know, we've worked on our relationship and it's in a new place now, but actually, you know, when one of those people goes, it's very hard. It's not the same anymore, is it?
It's not the same. And that's, I think that's another thing that is part of the grief, is coming to terms with your life never being the same again. No matter what you do, where you go, nothing will ever be the same again.
Yeah.
Christmases, birthdays, holidays, you know, we holidayed together. You have to get on with it. You have to. Mm. And you have to find a way of creating a new normal. I guess. So that's, I mean, obviously we've got a testing time with Christmas. That's going to be.
And you're only 7 months. It's not long at all.
Yeah. And that's going to be a real test for me. I think the thought of buying Christmas presents and not buying her a Christmas present and that kind of thing is going to be really tough. And I think that's going to be my biggest test to date, because we were such a close family. I mean, we still are a close
family. Will you do something special with the kids in remembrance to her?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of things planned. We're taking the kids to Lapland next week.
Shh, kids, if you're listening.
So that's a big surprise. And that's going to be my Christmas. I'm more looking forward to that than anything else.
Yeah.
Because I know Christmas Day is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
And we're just going to knit down together on Christmas Day. My dad, my brother and his wife and the kids are going to just have a really quiet one. But we've booked to go away for New Year, because it's my husband's 40th on the 3rd of January. It's my eldest daughter's on the 4th of January. And it would be my mum's birthday on the 2nd. Right. So we're all going to Mauritius, primarily to celebrate my husband's birthday. But it just seemed right that we all be together on her birthday.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, and I feel really grateful that we're able to do that and be together on that day, and you know, in such a special place.
Yeah. It's going to be lovely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, at the end of every podcast, we all need to take a breath now. Georgia needs some tissues.
Tissues, I know.
Firstly, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for asking me. It's a real privilege.
I just can't quite believe that you've been so open and honest. It's such a hard thing to even try and talk about, but I know that so many people listening will have gone through this / going through this, and it will really help them. So thank you. At the end of every podcast, we like to ask our guests for 5 of their favourite products that have kind of helped them through what's been going on in their lives. So I don't know if, you know, we had a conversation on the phone yesterday and you said that there was a book and a few other things that have helped you.
Yeah, okay. So the first thing is a book called The Magic by Rhonda Byrne. Now, it's her like a sequel. It's part of a series, so you might have heard of The Secret.
Oh, yes.
So The Magic is like a follow-on from that, and there's a couple, there's The Power. I read The Magic a few years ago and it just got me, and it's all about practicing gratitude, and I've always sort of, it's a book that I've always gone back to. I suffer with anxiety. It really, really helped with my anxiety. It's all about reshifting your mindset and looking at things positively and being grateful for the good things that happened to you that day and not dwelling on the negatives, which is what I tended to do, which would then cause my anxiety. And that really, really helped me through my mum's illness. Like I said, throughout her illness, I tried to focus on having her here and being grateful for that. So that really, really helped me to stay positive and not dwell on the fact that, fuck, my mum's dying, you know? Every day, just be like, she's here.
She's still here.
So that was a huge, huge help. Also, I'm like really into my crystals. I have this a clear quartz that, it's gonna sound, I sound like such a hippie.
No, we love it.
But and even my husband, who's like so not like into anything like that, he just says, I can't believe like how much those things have helped you. I have this clear quartz that I have by my bed. If I'm ever feeling anxious or stressed, I'll literally hold it and I can feel like the anxiety like running out of me.
They're so powerful, crystals.
It's amazing. And then,
where can you get one of those?
So there's a, what's her name? There's a girl on Instagram and she's amazing and I follow her and she's just really like,
We'll put her in the show notes.
There's a really amazing crystal shop in the Cotswolds if anyone's in Oxfordshire. But yeah, just all around really. But yeah, like do your research.
Yes.
And yoga and meditation. So I know it's not like an item, but it like in terms of just calming and just keeping on top of that, like anxiety is has been really good for me. And then there's one.
She's reaching under the table.
What's she going to bring out?
I couldn't remember the name of the book, but so when my mum was diagnosed, my mum was under Guy's Hospital. And they've got a fantastic cancer center there, and my mum had the most amazing nurse called Linda, and she realized quite early on how important my daughter was to my mum, and she invited Isabella to come in and see the cancer center, see where her nanny was having her treatment. The things that the NHS do. Gave me her own personal number if Isabella has any questions. I mean, I'm still in touch with her now, this nurse. She's a lovely lady. Anyway, she gave us a book called The Secret C, and it's all about, it's called Straight Talking About Cancer. And it was just a really good book to read with, for Isabella to read, to kind of, you hear that word cancer, and to a child, it must seem huge. And we all know as adults now that there are so many different strands and different, you know, you can have cancer and be over it in a few months or, you know, but when you're young and naive, cancer means death.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it does.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always. And that book, if you are going through, if a member of your family is going through cancer, and you want to kind of explain it to a child, that's a really good book.
Brilliant.
Katie, thank you so much. I'm coming right round to the other side of the table to give you the biggest hug. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're
girls.
Amazing.
It's been really cathartic.
We love you.
Thank you.
We're both
a speechless, actually, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, incredibly sad.
Yeah.
Incredibly sad, affecting all of us in the room. But a really important conversation to have, one that's not really spoken about that freely. You don't really go to those depths.
No, and I think hopefully there'll be some pieces of advice that people can take away from Katie's chat and things Katie's learnt along the way. that would be helpful or comforting to anybody who's going through it.
How brave was Katie to come in today and talk to us all about that? I mean, I know. It's just so raw. 7 months. I mean, 7 months after my dad died, I could barely go outside the house.
Yeah.
I know. It's amazing. But, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. Just, you know, it's one of those conversations that you have, which just completely over, that I felt like it was very overwhelming, and just watching somebody speak so openly, and you can see, you know, everything that they're feeling is just it's quite a lot.
She's so brave. You could see the grief as well. The grief was like pouring out of her.
Yeah, but equally when she spoke about her daughters, her face changed.
Lit up.
Yeah.
And I loved how she was so positive. She was like, I'm not going to let my grief affect my children's life.
Yeah. And I think that was such an interesting point as well, you saying that, you know, your therapist was the person that held you together.
Yeah.
And her saying that her children have held her together. Because that's the thing, isn't it? When stuff isn't going right in your life, you do hold it together for your children, whatever that is.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, and sometimes that does help you.
Yeah.
Because you have another purpose as well. So, yeah.
I think we need a cup of tea.
Yes, we do. And a biscuit, please.
So there is going to be no products from Georgia and I this week. Katie gave us some really incredible ones at the end there. So all that's left to say really is if you would like to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast, that would massively help us out. Of course, we would like a little 5-star if you're going crazy, please, with your thumbs.
And if you want to send us a message about anything we've spoken about today or anything you'd like us to speak about, it's at Made by Mummers, or you can DM Zoe, who is very good at getting back to DMs, at Zoe Hardman.
Yes, and we'll be back next week with more conversation. Can't wait.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.